Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gate, ready to go. OutKick 360 underway from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. And with Chad Withrow and Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Glad you're with us. Big show today. It's an OutKick day. We've got Armando Salguero, covers the NFL. He'll join us in about an hour and 15 minutes from right now. Coming up in 20 minutes, Trey Wallace discusses all things Southeastern Conference. And in the final hour today, Dan Dockich, host of Don't At Me across the OutKick Network. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you boys once again here in this very festive game room at 6th and Peabody.
Right.
Old Smoky Moonshine Yeehaw Beer. Going to want to play some Golden Tee at some point this week. Have not done that yet. NFL Blitz in front of me. Also a classic from the early 2000s. I'm fired up and ready to go on this Thursday.
You did not get
in. Memorial Day weekend is almost here.
Almost here. You did not get in your pregame hunt. You've been pre-show hunting each day of the week.
Didn't go on my safari before the
show
today.
We'll see how that affects your performance, because I feel like it's loosened you up.
Chad Withrow, big game hunter.
I think I could get a quick round in during the break. The problem is
it makes noise
afterwards.
The sound
continues after, and we'd be hearing that on air.
I don't think many of us would enjoy that, me in particular.
You know, but the important part, Paul, is the audience, right? I don't want the audience to suffer. If you suffer, I really don't care.
Yeah, you would be fine with that.
I think it'd be as loud as possible in your ear. I would not care. It's all about the audience. At least for me on this show, it's always
about
the audience.
I don't think the audience would care for it at
all. They wouldn't like it.
All the game, the arcade game's absolutely free, so we could hit all these up before week's end.
And if we could get the sound going of all of them, I'd have the Pac-Man sound going.
These were all just installed. Like this is right up Chad's alley. These were every arcade game in here was just installed. Even the ones that have been here that have been updated. So, Chad, I think by the time we hit Memorial Day weekend, every high score on every game should be you. It should just be Chad.
Well, Chad.
I've got the high score on the Bighorn Sheep portion of Big
because
Hunter.
It was blank.
Well, no, there was one person on there, but the score was very low.
Weakling. Yeah, somebody that played. Only one shot.
I've not played this game a lot. I'm not going to say that I'm very good at it, but I do have at least one big score. I'd like to get the high score on more of these. And by Friday, if I just started up every single game, we could make the show sound like an arcade in 1988, right? Where you walk in and it's got the same oxygen rate as a casino.
I think it'd
and
be
it
fun.
Sounds like that. It's chimes going, it's music going.
Why don't we
going.
Do it for last segment tomorrow? We start up every one of these machines during our last
I
break.
I think it'd be great.
And we go into the last segment with all of the ambient
yes.
noise.
Sounds like we're
hell. The last hour. I want to talk to Brent Hubbs with that going on in the background.
It's going to give Paul flashbacks of last weekend. At the casino.
Paul's just going
to give me flashbacks to Simon in an arcade.
Paul's going to mindlessly take cash out and start putting on the table once he hears that
just
noise.
Just throws his wallet away.
Right. He's going to start putting a betting on games immediately also.
I still do have a few dollars in my pocket.
Paul's going to say split them over and over when he hears that sound.
Double. Split.
Headlines throughout the day. Speaking of this conversation with casino, it makes me think of Goodfellas. R.I.P. Ray Liotta, who passed away at the age of 67, died in his sleep, according to reports. Chad, you told me when I walked in, he was filming. He was on set. He was on location, filming a new movie that was set to come out next year.
Yeah, he's filming. According to IMDb, he's currently filming three different movies. Was filming three different movies. This one was. The name of it, Dangerous Waters, was filming in the Dominican Republic, and he passed away in his sleep, 67 years old. Memorable guy. I mean, it's hard for me to...
Distinctive. Yeah.
It's hard for me to take Goodfellas, Ray Liotta, and not think that's Ray Liotta, right? Like, he's one of those guys that it felt like his character was him, and he wasn't playing a role, but we know that he was a really gifted actor, and he definitely was playing a role. But always strike me as a really cool dude. And sad news today because, Paul, you said it before, there's two movies that if he made nothing else, that would be a lasting legacy.
Just on Goodfellas and Field of Dreams alone, if that was his acting resume, and I'm sure I've seen him in other things, and I'm sure I remember him in other things. You listed a couple before we came on air. But just on those two phenomenal, phenomenal movies that probably are in my top 10, you know, he's a memorable guy who I'm sure I'll watch those movies multiple times in my life. I look forward to watching them with my son. And phenomenal acting work by him in both. And that scene at the end of Field of Dreams, I think, has a tug on anybody that's had a father-son relationship.
Shoeless Joe. And then he was in the movie Blow. He was in
The
John
author
Q.
of Blow was a professor of mine.
Really?
That's a great movie.
At Columbia Journalism School. I helped him do a little research for a later book.
And then I have not seen this, Chad, The Many Saints of Newark, the prequel to Sopranos.
Yeah, and that was just last year. That movie was out, which was really good. I just lost the movie again, but there was a movie in the early 90s that was great where he was an obsessive cop or ex-cop that worked for a security company that basically terrorized a young couple in a neighborhood. He was really good as the villain in that movie. Copland with Sylvester Stallone's another one. So really good career.
And, made a mark for sure.
One of those, when I saw that news, it was very sad to hear about that. Unlawful Entry, 1992, was the movie I was thinking about. That's underrated.
Those are those two iconic films are also ones that we will probably see. We would see anyway on Memorial Day weekend, like just playing randomly.
And they'll certainly go back to them, whoever has it, TNT, TBS.
I thought of you guys last night. I hit DVR. There's a new a special on History Channel on Teddy Roosevelt that is debuting. It's like two or three episodes, kind of like Grant was a few years ago. Debuts Monday night at 7 o'clock Central. So that's right up your guys' alley.
I like that. That's really up Chad's alley. Aren't you a Teddy guy?
I'm a big Teddy guy, so I'm looking right now to try to record that. I want to see it.
And we'll tell the guys in the studio, we are hearing an echo, so hopefully we can, whatever we just turned on, we can turn off.
I like playing through that.
Yeah.
Well, fun challenge.
If I knew how to correct it, I would. Hit us up on Twitter at Outkick360. There we go. Thank you. Outkick360 is where you can find us on Twitter. Headlines today, Josh Donaldson. Apologizes to Jackie Robinson's family, said he it was not intended to come across the way that it did publicly, and this was unsolicited. It's not like, based on the story I read, Jackie Robinson's family did not reach out or say anything publicly
about
this.
Didn't have any complaint about what went down. I mean, it's certainly conceivable it bothered them. But they didn't express it in a public way. I think Donaldson's done everything he can do. I don't know what the status of the appeal is. But once that's done, I think it's a dead and buried story. I don't know how much this will follow Donaldson as a bad thing.
It won't. I really don't think it will. And let me tell you why. Because of this statement, honestly. Like I read this statement, I'm thinking, you couldn't summarize a minor scandal any better and just bury it than the way that he did. Here's the full statement. First and foremost, I have the utmost respect for what Tim Anderson brings to the game of baseball. I stated over the weekend that I apologize for offending Tim, and it was a misunderstanding based on multiple exchanges between us over the years. My view of that exchange hasn't changed, and I absolutely meant no disrespect. In the past, it had never been an issue, and now that it is, we have a mutual understanding. And he continues, I would also like to apologize to Mrs. Rachel Robinson and the Jackie Robinson family for any distress the incident may have caused. Jackie was a true American hero, and I hold his name in the highest regard. I think that is
very good.
Very well said. And also, to reiterate, I've said this to him multiple times, and it was never a federal offense before. So I guess the misunderstanding was it was bothering him. He didn't speak out against it until now.
I didn't know any better.
I think that's the best way to defuse it, right? And Tim Anderson is just like, look, I don't want to make amends with a guy. I don't care. I don't want to have a relationship with him. We're not friends. We can just move on and not worry about it anymore.
That's fine.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a
very good
statement.
Have to come to an agreement on it. It's fine. Just move on. You play for different teams and go about your merry way.
But there'll probably be bad blood next time the Yankees and the White Sox take the field against each other. And so we'll have to watch for high and tight against Josh Donaldson, more likely than Tim Anderson.
Well, I think Josh Donaldson will just shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, now I think the move is just play
so
baseball
too.
And you can chat it up with guys you know on other teams, but just when you come across third base or come across his area, just don't say anything.
Right.
Just go about your business.
But do they throw him high and tight?
I don't think so.
I would hope not, but you know, it's over for Tim for Josh Donaldson. It doesn't sound necessarily like it's over for Anderson, who says he's done with it, but does it fester for him? I don't think we'll know until we see them on the field together again.
Sometimes all you have to do is ask someone's opinion, and they'll be opinionated when it comes to about places they've been or played for or coaches they've played for. They just need an outlet to express how they feel. That was exactly what happened with LeSean McCoy in regards to Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City. For the first time, I've heard something negative on Eric Bieniemy, other than
publicly.
The guy can't interview well, apparently. This is – so last offseason, he interviewed for every job that was open.
Not
virtually.
This offseason, but last.
Last offseason, he interviewed for – every job that was open and got none of them. And then as we go into this offseason, the discussion was more about whether or not he would be back as the play caller or the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs, and if he would be paired back with Andy Reid, and turns out he's back. But here is LeSean McCoy on the podcast I Am Athlete, and he was just a guest there, and he was with Bieniemy. That was the same year the Chiefs, one of the years the year they not just went to the Super Bowl, but won it. And the quote is, there's a reason why every year they hype him up to get a job, and then when the time comes, nobody hires him because they know the type of coach he really is. That's as blunt and as negative as I've heard anyone speak on that guy.
Listen, he would have said more.
What type of coach is that?
He would have said more if these two – I listened to it. These two guys who were interviewing him were horrible. They stepped on his toes every – did you hear it or just read it?
I'm just reading it.
Every time he started to really go, they cut him off. They're like, oh, he's going to say something. Whoa, here we go, whatever. And they kept stepping on him. He was going to be expansive.
Yeah.
And they kept stopping him from being expansive.
It's a serious
by
XM
reacting.
Show, too, I
It
believe.
Was really bad interviewing, really bad. They gave him no space to breathe and be expansive.
Well,
this is good.
It's athletes interviewing them, right?
Yeah, this is good that we got this.
Are you surprised?
We would have gotten more if they had just shut up and let him talk.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not surprised that athletes are bad interviewers. That's not really their skill set.
No.
When they're talking to a fellow athlete.
But even just conversationalists, they were horrible conversationalists.
So he did not go further and say what type of coach he's talking about.
Because
he says they find out what type of coach he is. I don't know. I'd like to know more about what he means by that.
I think the gist was, and maybe somebody will correct us in the chat, about treating people a different way or how he comes at people.
Yeah, he said he spoke to players a certain way that was not all the way appropriate, I guess.
To the court.
Inappropriate, you know, paraphrasing. But, again, like it's – it's refreshing to hear a former athlete's opinion on a guy that otherwise we're sitting here wondering why is this – he's always mentioned in all these interviews, and organization after organization has passed up on him despite him being connected to Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
And I think McCoy's got the stripes and the credibility
no
for
doubt.
This to mean something. He's not a sour grape. You know, yes, he was at the end of his career when he was in Kansas City, but the guy's got stripes. He knows what's what. He was an excellent player who had excellent production for the vast majority of his career, right? This isn't coming from maybe he's a little disgruntled, but this isn't coming from some disgruntled middle-of-the-pack player.
That's right. Coming up, Trey Wallace will join us. We will discuss all things SEC and college football headlines with Trey. In about an hour, Armando Salguero will join us as well. Chad, there's a lot to talk about in regards to the NFL and Colin Kaepernick getting a workout with the Las Vegas Raiders. We were discussing earlier prior to the show, we haven't seen any takeaways from that yet.
We've seen a takeaway from Mike Florio. He's got a takeaway.
He has a takeaway before he even sees a workout sees feedback from it.
Better than any available option out there.
Yeah.
Better than any option on any of these teams. Better than Marcus Mariota currently. Better than any current option on the teams. Mike Florio thinks he's better than all these guys and hasn't seen him play in 5 years.
Yeah, it's premature. It's wishfully premature.
Way premature, and assuming that he would be starting. So what Florio is saying is he's going to come in and start over Derek Carr. I mean, if he's that good, you're going to start him. And other teams would be trying him out.
He didn't say that about the Raiders, but he did say it about other stops.
He was also not good whenever he was out of football. Like the year that everything went down, he was not good.
No, he had a bad finish. But guys have rebounded from a bad year before, but not after a five-year break. It's very presumptuous to presume anything about the guy except that he's got, you know, a lot to prove. That's the fair presumption. The guy has a lot to prove. And I think I don't know what to presume about what would come out. I think they'd be tight-lipped no matter what. I think if he was fantastic or – I think if there was an extreme result of this workout, super fantastic or super horrific – it would have been most likely to have leaked out by now. I think that means – my guess is it's somewhere between super fantastic and super horrific.
Coming up, Trey Wallace from Outkick.com next on Outkick 360. First, though, Aurora Nutrascience, VitalLifeScience.com, the website to check out all of the great supplements that they offer to keep you mentally sharp and healthy. Aurora delivers your supplements where you need them the most, your body. VitalLifeScience.com has all the details, but – you can see more information, and you can receive a 15% discount with the code OUTKICK360 at checkout. Typical pills, capsules, not well absorbed. Here is Aurora, unique, cutting-edge, nutritional, and absorbable supplements encapsulated in liposomes, and that ensures greater absorption in the body's bloodstream. I use the vitamin C, the vitamin D3, the glutathione, but they have so many more options for you. And for what you may be looking to help out with, Aurora supplements absorbed in the bloodstream through the GI tract, and that ensures it's not going to be wasted like a typical capsule or pill. Visit VitalLifeScience.com, 15% off with the code OUTKICK360 at VitalLifeScience.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Outkick 360 across the Outkick network. Coming up, Trey Wallace will join us. We will get with Armando Salguero in an hour from now. We will also chat with Dan Dockich in hour number three as we are live at 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. So we do actually have an update through this break on the workout for Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, good.
Jeremy Fowler says, I was told two things stood out in Colin Kaepernick's workout with Raiders. Arm strength and good overall conditioning. Workout was largely considered a positive. Let's see where it goes from here.
I mean, the conditioning is no surprise at all.
No.
I mean, the one thing we've seen about the guy is that he's worked out and extremely fit. That is zero surprise. Would have been a massive surprise if he was anything other than incredibly fit. Agreed? I mean, he's had 5 years of working out. So I'm not surprised by that. Arm strength, that's a good sign for him that he's got good arm strength right now and that stood out. So I guess these nuggets are going to drip and dribble out of that. You know, he's not going to get signed purely on arm strength and fitness.
Well, and is, you know, to me the question with Colin Kaepernick is when you look at, it's not comparing him to starting quarterbacks in the league, it's teams with a backup. You know, is he a better backup option for someone? I think when it was a year in, 2 years in, 3 years in, when things got a little bit more quiet with him, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, he's going to be a better backup option than a lot of backups in the league. But now that we're 5 years removed, Paul, I'm not so sure that I could say that about him. But I'm not going to rule that out. Now, I'm never going to go as far as Mike Florio went in saying that he's a better option for Seattle, Houston, Atlanta, you know, he kind of Carolina went down the list than their current quarterbacks and even starting quarterbacks. I'm not going to go that far, but is there a possibility where Colin Kaepernick is a better option than some backups across the league? Maybe.
Certainly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of crappy backups in the league. We know that. So the pool he's competing with, like you're saying, you know, he's competing with guys like Logan Woodside's the backup here in town. He's done nothing.
Not anymore.
Proven nothing. Well, right now he's the number two, depending on what
the
they
last,
do with
what,
Malik
3
Willis.
Years you could have said that. Is Colin Kaepernick better than Logan Woodside? I'd say probably.
And here's the thing. Woodside would continue to be the backup here in town and not Colin Kaepernick because of what Kaepernick brings with him.
Right. The Titans have no
That's the difference here. It's not
the football skill.
Are you better than the third string quarterback on the roster? It's that.
And what you bring with you worth it?
But here's the other thing that I was driving home yesterday. I'm like, man, I failed to mention that. The other part of this storyline is Kaepernick had an option with the Denver Broncos based on the way John Elway tells the story, and that he turned down the offer because he didn't want to play for a certain amount of money and come in and, you know, be the backup guy.
Well, he's changed his stance on that now. He's willing to be – he's said he's willing to be a backup. And if you're willing to be a backup, you're willing to play for backup money, which we said yesterday is, what, 1.06.
The base money, though. There are backups that make $7 million a year. I'm talking the base money. That's the type of discussion that he's got to have and come to terms with to get back in the league. And then you can have a bonus incentive contract too.
Right. I mean, and you might get a little signing bonus.
Sure, but there are more things to it than what Florio's saying by just saying, "Oh, he's better than this guy. He's better than this guy."
You can't know. You can't know.
He doesn't know. And
nobody knows.
And none of that came out after he was throwing to receivers and running backs at the Michigan Pro Day. We're just hearing this now because the Raiders are finally bringing him in.
So here's so we get it fully in context from Mike Florio. Here's the complete tweet from Pro Football Talk. Colin Kaepernick, with time to knock off the rust and prepare, would be better than any option the Seahawks, Panthers, and Texans currently have. He'd be better than any quarterback that the Dolphins currently have. He'd possibly win the job in Atlanta, too. We're not talking about winning a backup job. He's talking about winning the main job.
They say he's better than Desmond Ridder.
There's a lot of presumptions there in saying, with time to knock off the rust and prepare, he's saying he's better than all right, these situations.
Quickly, run through those teams one at a time. So he's better than Drew Lock,
Seahawks,
Geno Smith,
Drew Lock, Panthers,
Sam Darnold,
Matt Corral, Texans, Davis Mills, who they, according to John McClain, believe in to some extent,
and Marcus Mariota and Desmond
Tua,
Ridder.
Tua with the Dolphins,
and Tua. I mean, Tua and Desmond Ridder, to me, are the two there. I'm not saying he's better than any of the other ones, but the top of the list guys on that list, to me, are Tua, who I don't like at all, and Desmond Ridder, who, you know, was rated as one of the three or four best guys coming in out of the draft.
Well, and
also, it's going to a good quarterback guy.
I think saying that, okay, I completely disagree with that, but if you want to believe that,
right?
Okay, I'll go with you on that. That is not taking into account the possibilities for any of those teams. And that remains Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo. And I'm sorry, but I can say definitively Colin Kaepernick is not a better option than Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo right now for one of those teams
if they wanted
to make a trade for those two guys.
Absolutely not.
So it's easy to say what they currently have, he's better than every option. I disagree, but okay, whatever. But you're not saying the fact that not only are these guys currently on the roster with those teams – an option to start at quarterback, but also you've got Baker Mayfield, you've got Jimmy Garoppolo as options for those teams.
Guys that he may well be better than: Tim Boyle, Kyle Allen, Jeff Driscoll, people like that. And that's the pool that he should be being judged against. I think Mike Florio's doing him no favors, really. because the conversation is about guys like Tim Boyle or Jared Stidham, who's the guy he tried out to potentially compete with or replace. That's a fair conversation to be having about him right now. Now, well, we all have the same concerns. 5 years removed is a hell of a long time for anybody to be gone. That's not gone from military service or something.
And I'm with you. But the real conversation is he better than Tim Boyle or Jared Stidham?
And worth the stuff.
But in a real NFL season, if Jared Goff gets hurt, or if something happens with the Raiders, what's going to happen is those in game, those backups come in and finish the game, and then more likely than not, a veteran is brought in off the street, and you know that's when we see the phone calls for the Drew Breeses, the Ben Roethlisbergers. I'm exaggerating a bit on those veteran names, but we see it all the time with the speculation on who's going to be signed and brought in from the outside. That's what you would do to save your season. Or you just go with the backup quarterback that you have and you go get a high draft pick, depending on when the injury takes place. But those guys are there to come in and finish a second half if you need them. And then you reassess where you are.
Yeah.
Not every team
most
has
the time,
Tannehill
though,
backup spot.
Most of the time you're not getting
or you have a young quarterback that's on a rookie deal and it's time to figure out if he's worth the investment long term, and find out. And then you go all in with that too.
But we say most of the time, if your starting quarterback goes down, you're screwed.
Yes.
That's the recipe in the NFL, unless you're fortunately positioned, unless you happen to be having a rookie sitting on your bench who needed a year and you can accelerate his clock and he's a lot better than you imagined early, all of those things. Generally, if you're a competitive team that had high hopes and your quarterback goes down for the season or for 6 or 8 weeks, you're screwed. That's the way of the NFL now. Kaepernick's not going to change that.
No, but Baker Mayfield does.
Yeah, but Mayfield and Garoppolo do change it.
Yeah,
you've got two options right now on the market that, if you're really serious
and you have money,
You should be probably trying to line up.
And again, I go with my Giants example as, okay, this is the Titans example. You know, with Mariota and then acquiring Tannehill. Instead of going into a season with one okay option but may not be good at all, why not go into a season with two options if one doesn't work out that you feel at least optimistic that one of them is going to work out?
And you have a couple teams.
And I think
that's
Baker Mayfield as a backup for a team like that.
You have a couple teams that are set, like Philadelphia. If Jalen Hurts gets hurt, you might actually get better with Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew is a high-level backup that's had some success as a starter and brings you some moxie off the bench, which you usually don't get at all.
A little boost.
Yeah. There are a couple teams like that.
That's a good example of someone you want short-term, but long-term, no team's investing in.
Right. But given a second chance, like if Hurts got hurt in the first month and was gone, you would say, Eagles are still an interesting team. They're not done.
Yeah,
most teams you're saying are done.
They're competitive. They can stay competitive. Agreed. I'm told Trey Wallace is there. We'll try this. Trey from Outkick.com covering the SEC. Trey, hope you're there and hope you're well.
Jonathan, I can hear you pretty well, buddy.
Yep, same here. How are things this week? Are you staying dry, unlike the rest of the SEC tournament?
Pretty much, man, trying to. You know, we knew the bad weather was going to come through this week. And the SEC has done about as good as they can when it comes to the schedule. We'll see. You know, this first game that's going to kick off here in just a little bit, first pitch between Florida and A&M here in about 15 minutes. And then Tennessee is going to play Vanderbilt. It's scheduled for 7. We'll see how that goes, but Tennessee Vanderbilt are going to play tonight, in my opinion, and we'll see how the rest of the week lines up.
Trey, the story across college football is scheduling right now, and that's no different with the SEC. What's your favorite of the options that you laid out at Outkick.com of possible future schedule formats for the conference?
Man, I really, Chad, I like the 3-6. I like the 9 games because that leaves you with 3 somewhat, I guess, permanent rivals, and then you can rotate the 6 teams. And then, excuse me, there's a good chance that you know, you're going to get in different venues every other year. You know, compared to, let's just say, compared to the other model where, okay, you've got to have one permanent rival, and then they're going to find you, you know, the other seven teams that you're going to be playing. You know, the eight game compared to nine game. I think that overall, I take for instance, like Auburn, who plays, you know, Georgia, they play Alabama, they play LSU. You know, those are the type of games you don't want to give up. Same thing can be said for Tennessee. It would be very hard if you set Tennessee down at a table and said, okay, look, in 3 years, 4 years, you've got to make a decision. Who would you like to keep on your schedule? Would you like to keep Alabama permanently? Would you like to keep Florida permanently? Or you want to keep Georgia? So if you go with the nine-game format and you're able to keep three permanent teams, Chad, you don't have to take that off the table. Whereas, you know, the other model, in Tennessee's case, they might have to choose between, you know, Alabama, you know, or Florida, you know, and who they want. So I'm really liking the nine game. I have a feeling that is the model that's going to get passed, you know, soon enough between these SEC athletic directors, presidents, and football coaches when they all agree on it. And I think that's the model they go to. I think that's the one that actually makes sense out of the two.
How long do you think the process is to sort out everybody's three?
They've been talking about it. They've been talking about it for a while now. I think they're going to get more of a feel of it next week in Destin, starting on Tuesday morning. And I think from there, we kind of get, okay, this is where everybody stands. Let's take a vote, you know, on where everybody would be at. Okay, you know, because it's got to be a majority here. And, you know, in talking to some folks, it kind of seems like it might be a little bit down the middle when it comes to both types of scheduling. I think we're looking at, you know, 6 months to a year before something definite maybe starts coming out, and maybe that's how they want to go at it. You know, my perfect thing would be, and Paul, you're going to love this, and I wrote about this the other day. Like, if they do this scheduling thing, and they do nine games, we need to have it like a FIFA World Cup draw, where somebody gets up on stage and they have little ping pong balls and they open it up and they present the team, and that's what schedule or that's what pod they put them in, and that's who you're going to be playing. Like, we got to up the ante a little bit when it comes to the scheduling format. And the first thing that came to mind was the FIFA World Cup draw.
Well, that show would get some ratings, that's for sure.
So I'm reading your piece right now, Trey, about, and I read it a little bit yesterday, but picking through what Lane Kiffin had to say in his interview. And we know that the league came down and said there's a gag order on SEC coaches before Lane Kiffin spoke with Dan Patrick's show last week, but he goes and does an interview either way. What did you like the most about what he said in terms of college football, where we stand now, and where we're headed in the future? If you had to pick one bit of info out of that interview, Trey, what do you agree with the most?
I agree that we're going to have a very, very hard time in the next 2 to 3 years on how these players that are coming in that are very high profile, the ones that are getting a good chunk of money, how that is going to play out in a locker room, how that's going to play out on the field, how many donors and boosters and people are going to get agitated when the player that they invested a lot of money into is not seeing playing time. And I keep going back on this. Since I'm here in the state of Tennessee and Nico has been such a big deal. So, the best correlation to me would be, okay, what if Nico, you know, he comes in, he's allegedly reported, whatever, signed this deal for a lot of money. Okay. But then you've got somebody like Taven Jackson, who's already on the roster, that Josh Heupel and this staff like, and they think he can get the job done. What are you going to do? Are you going to roll with the pressure of the kid that's being paid so much money? Are you going to roll with the kid that you think can get the job done? Like, that's where it's going to get real interesting to me is these big boosters and these big donors coming in and having to play this out over the next 2 to 3 years, because you're going to see a lot. And, you know, some of these big wigs around the SEC and college football, they like to be known. And I'm talking about the donors. They like it to be known. Hey, this is what I do for the programs. And, you know, I think that made sense. I think Lane Kiffin talking about how, you know, boosters are now, you know, should be looked at as minority owners. I agree with that. I don't disagree. I think it actually makes sense. If you're paying that amount of money, you want to see what your product looked like on the field. And that is players. So, you know, looking at that, and then, you know, just the whole angle on, you know, salary caps, you know, when it comes to certain players and how that would, you know, play out in the locker room. And I just feel like he has made some really good points out of frustration. And I also feel like he has just made some really good points in general. Like, this is something that we can look at. And you know, I think that the Nick Saban thing, you know, him coaching and however long he coaches, you know, I think that's something that, you know, Saban, you would think he's got at least 3 to 4 more years in him. I don't know if it's going to be like a Jay Wright or a Coach K thing. I don't think we will ever get out of Saban something that along the lines of, hey, this is my last year, let's go on a retirement tour around the Southeastern Conference. No, this guy is either going to win a national championship and then retire a few days after, or he's going to lose out on one and just ride off into the sunset. I don't know how much longer Saban's going to be around, Chad, and I think that's when we might see some kind of changing of the guard when it comes to what goes on in the Southeastern Conference.
Trey Wallace from Outkick.com has been our guest. Trey, we apologize for the shorter segment today. Maybe I'll reach out after the show and we can catch back up tomorrow on the show here if you want.
Guys, I'll be down in Destin all next week for spring meetings. So I look forward to getting on with you guys.
Yeah,
it's going to be an eventful week down in Destin. Enjoy that show down there.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Trey Wallace, Outkick.com, has been our guest. Headlines coming up within the next 20 minutes or so. Maybe not the new most hated owner, but right now the one who has the ire of the rest of the ownership group in the NFL. We've got that name for you. Plus, Marshawn Lynch had a party and a loss that you would have thought he was the victor of all victors. Paul gave us the details of the Marshawn Lynch party after a Super Bowl loss. That is incredible. But when we come back, the How to Murder Your Husband author has been found guilty of doing exactly that. That's from Outkick.com.
Shocking twist.
That's next on Outkick 360.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here's the story. A jury in Portland has convicted a self-published romance novelist who once wrote an essay titled How to Murder Your Husband of fatally shooting her husband 4 years. This happened 4 years ago, and it would have been 7 years after she wrote this novel or essay. Outkick 360 rolls on.
Did she follow her directions well?
Apparently not, because her essay was on how to murder your husband and get away with it. She did not get away with it. The jury came back unanimously.
So 7 years ago, she self-published this essay.
Mm-hmm.
3 years after that, she's allegedly murdered her husband and is being charged with that crime.
No. Been convicted. In 2011, okay, she self-published this essay.
All right.
In 2018, her husband died and was murdered while he was at a culinary institute with the same gun, make and model, that his wife owned.
Now, think about this. Follow the timeline here with me. You wrote an essay 7 years prior to actually murdering your husband. How many years were you considering murdering your husband if it led to the point where this isn't the first step, right? Like, I hate my husband, I might murder him, and then you just immediately write an essay about it. This had to be building for years before that. She writes the essay, and then 7 years later actually does the damn thing. That is remarkable patience.
Remarkable, but also, you know, Paul asked the question, did she follow her advice well? Aside from getting caught, like, item zero would be stay away from surveillance footage.
Yes.
And she can be seen driving to and from the Institute, for which this guy would cook and do different things on a YouTube channel. And she can be seen going to and from the Institute on the day of his murder.
I've got two big questions.
How was he murdered? Do we know that?
He was shot.
With this gun that she owned. I have two big questions. One, did she consider divorce? Because I think the way to go if you're considering killing your spouse is first to divorce.
File for divorce.
Get away.
Irreconcilable
get
differences.
Get some distance, yes. Right? If you get some distance,
you can't get
probably
insurance money on divorce.
The murderous feelings probably dissipate if you get some distance from the person you want to kill. Two, was she a fan of Shonda Rhimes' How to Get Away with Murder? Another show.
That was post 2011, though. That show probably didn't come up. That was, I mean, she was a real trailblazer here. Because this show was like 2017 or 2018.
But she's also, she was
2011 was way before that show started.
She's also a romance novelist, so she was about love and
love. Love. Well, love.
Fall in love and then kill that person.
There's a fine line, Hud, between love and murderous rage.
A friend of mine.
Be the same, one and the same.
A friend of mine, his best man at his wedding, talked about how he had gone through the highest highs and the lowest lows, which we always bring up, and I'm bringing up now. And this marriage clearly had both.
I'm always intrigued by what the judge or the courts will allow or won't allow into the case against you or on your behalf if you're the plaintiff, right? So initially, this essay was not allowed into evidence.
How could it not be?
So you have to prove the case because it's not a part of that day or the case itself, and the it's all circumstantial. The physical evidence itself of why you would look her way should be more significant than what she wrote 7 years prior.
But I would think this is a significant element.
But the prosecutor was able to use elements of the essay in his argument to set up who it was and why it was who it was, and then point to the evidence. I mean, she's on camera, and she owns the same gun.
By the way, while we're talking trials, just a great moment yesterday in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, where they had the TMZ guy on the stand being questioned by Amber Heard's lawyer, and she says, aren't you getting your 15 minutes of fame here? And he said, I don't really see that being the case. TMZ's got a lot of money. They come after me here. I'm in a dire kind of circumstances. Aren't you getting your 15 minutes of fame by representing Amber Heard?
Turned the question back.
Oh, it was very cutting. Very well done by the witness.
I love that.
Fantastic.
How to Get Away with Murder, the Shonda Rhimes show, premiered in 2014. So this woman was three years ahead.
I wonder if she's got a case against Shonda Rhimes because she might have stolen some of her ideas.
She's convicted for the murder, then comes back and says, "Now I've got
from
a little
jail." She's got a case
bone to pick with Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah, if you're on the jury, Paul, and you hear that the defendant wrote an essay about how to get away with murder and your husband, that you're going to be prejudiced against the case. You're supposed to be presumed innocent, and no matter if you wrote a story about it, doesn't mean that you can prove that she killed it. They were able to do it without it.
Well,
is my
that's
point.
That's impressive.
It is.
Yeah, it would prejudice me.
But it's also a layup. This was a layup.
It's also a big piece of evidence.
You had thought out how to do the very thing you're
If I'm the prosecution, I'm bringing this up and saying, okay, we have the surveillance footage. We have all these pieces of evidence.
And
in 2011,
here's a cherry on top.
This woman actually wrote about killing her husband and getting away with it.
Maybe she's like, well, OJ said, if I did it, let me go ahead and just write this. Like, if I were to do this.
Well, what if the sequel to How to Get Away with the Murder in 2011 was 2025?
I failed to.
Here's how I got away with murder. Like, let's go. I know there's no statute of limitations on murder.
I failed to get away with
it. But the sequel is, if she didn't get convicted, that's like the OJ Simpson, right? He didn't get convicted. He wrote later, if I did it. She writes, well, here's how I got away with it. And everyone's thinking, that's odd. Wasn't this woman's husband murdered? I think the husband was actually murdered also.
Wild.
the new most hated owner, and if not hated, the most disliked today on May the 26th. We'll tell you why, because it's coming out of the NFL owners' meetings in Atlanta. All of that and more in the 360 headlines across the Outkick Network. This is Outkick 360 from 6th and Peabody in Nashville. Hang with us.